Hello, hello, welcome to another episode. I thought for this one I'm going to go into one of the main, mental health things that has coloured actually my whole life. Hypochondria, good old hypochondria. Now, it's kind of like an omnipresent, it's like an all-present thing that is kind of always nips in and out, and I suppose it's an expression of anxiety, some sort of general anxiety related to the weird condition of the spirit inhabiting a physical body that inevitably in some way is basically dying. I mean, you know, and it is the good shit, and it is trigger warning everything. Just in case an innocent soul accidentally wandered onto this episode, it's like, yeah, no, buckle up. So I think the basic is, I think there's a very good episode by, there's a very good video by the School of Life on YouTube on this, and how anxiety is a perfectly understandable part of life that you shouldn't attempt to remove because it has a very important role. But of course, you know, sometimes it just goes a little bit to the side and it has some unwanted side effects. Hence, to the side. And I suppose this one, hypochondria, is one of them. Now, I don't want to talk about the day-to-day things that are relatively not, you know, I suppose I want to highlight three situations that I found myself in because of my hypochondria that were very extreme, I think. I think they really interfered with my life at that point. And I think showcase the extent to which something that seems not so big of a deal can actually be very powerful. And I think this probably extends to the general general conversation around mental health. I saw a post by Arianna Huffington on LinkedIn today, quoting someone whose name I don't know. It's like I can remember who posted it, but I can't remember the actual person that said that to begin with. Anyway, but the quote said, "You know, it is very weird how if someone takes care of their body every single day, if they have an exercise routine or they have a certain diet, you know, that is not weird. That's perfectly normal and understandable. But if that person has a mental health routine or a spiritual routine, every single day, somehow that is unthinkable." And I think I find myself in the group of people who are not ashamed at all. I think there was this game, actually, over the new year, we played this game, and one of the questions was, what are the most important things in your life, and how much time do you dedicate to them every day? How many hours a day do you actually dedicate to those things? And my turn came, so I just said, you know, this, that, and the other. I said I care about my health, my physical, my mental well-being. I dedicate, you know, like an hour or 2 hours a day to that. And someone said, "What?" It's like, "Oh, it sounds like you just go get manicures and pedicures all day." By the way, I don't. But oh, you're just kind of, you know, pampering yourself. Oh, I would love to be able to pamper myself all day. And it's like, I'm not pampering myself. You know, I think it's a very personal thing what each person knows that they need in their life and how much of it and when and how. It's not for anyone else to judge that. you know, if someone goes and gets painkillers for arthritis or whatever, who am I to say, "Oh, well, you look fine. I'm sure it's all in your head." Well, it is all in your head. Reality is all in your head. Where do you think it is? mm. it is all in your head. And if I have identified certain things that I want to take care of, how weird for someone to try to make me feel as though I shouldn't. I mean, gee. Let's jump straight into the hypochondria side of things. So I've got three examples when my hypochondria went real bad. And looking back on it, I think, okay, that was pretty extreme. That's like some pretty extreme stuff, right? So the first one happened not long after my mother had been diagnosed with a heart rhythm problem that she had to get surgery for. It wasn't that serious. The surgery was relatively straightforward, and she's been fine ever since. So it was stressful in the moment, and I'm sure there's certain things about it that maybe she hasn't even told me. But from my perspective, it was a problem, but it was fixable and it got fixed. So sometime after that, if this thought just crept into my mind about how I wasn't exactly 100% sure how she had got that issue, and I wasn't sure whether it was actually hereditary at all. I was like, oh, what if I've got this? What if one day I just wake up and I have this too? Like, you know. So that thought crept into my mind. And one night, I was living with my parents at that time. I just started panicking, thinking about, you know, oh my goodness, what's going on? And of course, my heart started racing just a little bit. And then I thought, oh, this is it. This is it. It's happening right now. Because my mother described how her symptoms was just her heart racing out of control. And I thought, well, how do I know this isn't it happening to me right now? And so, of course, I fell down the loop of positive feedback, of getting more and more panicked. So it started racing more and more and more. And I was paralyzed in my bed. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to die. It's happening right now. So I just screamed, Mom! I woke her up. She came to my room. My dad followed. They're like, what's happening? I was like, my heart is racing. Obviously, I think because my heart had been racing for so long and I wasn't moving in the bed, my muscles sort of got really uncomfortable and sore, and like I just had this full body discomfort, which again made me feel like, oh, something's happening, I'm dying. And my mother called the ambulance and they came over, the paramedics came and they checked me, and they were so calm. They just kind of looked at me and just like, you know, measured my pulse or whatever. They just asked me how I was feeling. And it was the middle of the night. They were so calm, and I was like, what's happening? You know, why are they not doing something about this? Cause I just felt so bad. So they put me in an ambulance and they drove me to the hospital. It was in the middle of the night. There was no traffic. They just drove. There was no Nino, Nino, Nino. You know, they just casually drove to the hospital, and yeah, they just put me in a bed. I was freaking out. You know, the whole experience of feeling that and being taken to hospital was just freaking me out even more. They took an ECG, and after a while, you know, I had these sticker things on me for the ECG. So I felt like a lab rat, turned into a mere object. I think this is where this anxiety comes from. This realization that your body is actually in a way just this thing that is, for now, inevitably just going to degrade and perhaps get some sort of disease. And, you know, you feel like you are totally not in control of that. And it kind of highlights how ultimately the body isn't really you, and seeing your body fail in these ways traumatizes you. So after a while, one of the doctors came and said, oh, well, you just have this, you know, your heart is racing, but we don't see anything pathological about it. So, you know, and then later on, I think a nurse came and she said, you know, how are you feeling? Is there anything in particular, you know, upsetting that you're going through at the moment, you know, because so basically hinting that this was actually in my head, really, not really a purely physical phenomenon, but actually a mentally driven, symptom, basically, of my heart racing. And I remember my parents were sort of there as this nurse asked me if there was anything that was going on in my life. And I think I said something like, everything. I was like, what's going wrong? You know, I was like, everything. Oh my Lord. I was sort of looking at my parents like, where do I start? I'm laughing now, but it was shitty, man. It was pretty terrifying and shitty. I had a really bad year that year in terms of my health. I think I ended up getting pneumonia. I got like a sort of like the flu or something. And then that lasted for like a week and then 2 weeks. And then, well, my doctor actually said, oh, well, just wait it out. Of course, it had become pneumonia. So my parents actually took me to A&E. And I waited there for like 4 hours and I was really ill, like really ill. And, I was asked, you know, okay, what's your problem? And I said, well, I've got this flu-like thing. And then she just kind of looked at me like, did you seriously just come here for that? And I was like, yeah. So they just did some tests and they asked me to provide a urine sample. And I tried, and I remember as I stood up, I just felt really, really lightheaded. And I couldn't walk. And I just got this horrific, like, head pain. And it felt like I was going to pass out, but I wasn't passing out. It was almost like I wished I would just pass out so I didn't have to experience it, but I wouldn't pass. I was just trapped in this frenzy of lightheadedness and dizziness. I just felt horrible. So they put me in a wheelchair and then they poked me around for ages. They couldn't get a cannula in. So they tried like five times in different places. It was literally torture. And then of course they took an x-ray and they're like, oh yeah, yeah. And I suppose you do have a chest infection. So they just put me on antibiotics and I was like, okay. It took me like a couple months to actually recover from that. It was pretty, pretty grim. But that's not to do with the hypochondria. So the second hypochondria-related thing was actually when I was living on my own. And there was just this weird thing about living on my own, because I thought, if something happens to me, there's literally no one to see it happening. So I could literally drop down dead and no one would even know. And you read about these things where, you know, you need to call the ambulance within like 30 seconds or 2 minutes. And it's like very, very time sensitive situation. And you think, well, there's no one here. I'm on my own. So if this were to happen, I would just be left for dead on the floor. So I would get these thoughts, you know, I'd go to sleep and sort of in the middle of the night, I couldn't go to sleep because I thought, oh, what if this happens? And I would just get myself into a panicky mode. And at one point, I was seeing this person and I realized that I actually wanted to go to their house so that I wouldn't be on my own. So that, you know, if I felt really panicky, at least I knew that there was someone there. And there was this sense of feeling a bit more secure because there were people around me as opposed to being on my own. And so I would find any excuse to go to their house and stay there overnight. And then I realized that's the reason why I was doing it. And it was just really strange. You know, I could just give myself an excuse that, oh, you know, actually there's another reason and it's not related. But it was related to that. And it's just really strange because I really enjoyed living on my own because I'd never lived on my own like my whole life. So in every other sense, the freedom of it was great. But for some reason, at that point at night, I would just kind of feel really, really, really panicky. Now, as I say this, there might be some people still who just have this resistance to pandering to certain mental health issues because, you know, either they think they're not really real or real enough, or they think even if they are real, they shouldn't be made into a big deal. And I can totally get that point. I mean, I think everyone at one point or another, has or can be pushed to the point where they would, want to have this resistance, you know, someone says they're not feeling well, you know, and you just want to say, you know, snap out of it. I certainly have that, you know, I read about other things that maybe I've not experienced. And I think, oh, well, that's bullshit, or that's not that big of a deal, or why are you making such a big deal out of that? Or just this resistance to kind of, being over the top, pandering to something that you think, oh, you know, just force your way through it. Don't dwell on it, right? Don't live in that space. Find a way out of it, you know, find a way through it. Don't get comfortable being uncomfortable almost. So I don't know whether my stories come across to some people like that, where it's like, oh, you know, snap out of it, or, you know, just get over it. Or whether people can empathize with, you know, but from my own perspective, I didn't think much of any of these things because I very much have a sort of a headstrong, I have, you know, I'm a strong person. I'm not actually going to think about that or dwell on that sort of attitude. So I didn't feel sorry for myself in those moments when these things were happening. I just thought, you know, whatever, I'm just going to get over it. I'm not even going to think about it. It was only later on, after these things had happened, that I sort of looked back on them as if they happened to someone else. And I thought, okay, what do I think about this situation? And I thought, well, that's crazy. You know, that's quite extreme. That's quite upsetting. That's quite, it's a problem. You know, I can see that this is a problem. I wouldn't expect that person to ignore it because it's clearly big enough to not be ignored. And this brings me to my last example. This was so insane that I literally couldn't even believe it. Essentially, I was sat at my desk on the computer, you know, watching some stuff, and then I'd realized that for the past day of the past couple of days, I had this kind of sensation in my lower right abdomen. And it hadn't gone away. And I realized that I'd had it for a while. So I thought, okay, what is that? And I just, you know, I started looking it up and I thought, okay, is it appendicitis? Because it is in that place, it's in that location. And so I started reading about the symptoms of appendicitis and, you know, I read and read and read and read and just was freaking myself out even more. And even though on a mental level, it was just a case of, oh, I'm just going to read the symptoms, and if they match, they match, and if they don't match, they don't match. But what you have to appreciate is actually that's not a mental exercise at all. It's an emotional exercise, because you are responding to what you're reading and you are not being rational in that moment. So after I'd been reading and trying to figure out if that's what I had, and there were, and the consequences of it and the treatment, and just going way over my head with it, way too far, taking it way too far, I stopped reading and I thought, okay, how am I feeling? Is this what I'm feeling? And I just started feeling lightheaded, and I realized I was going to pass out. And thankfully my bed was right next to my desk. So I just, I think I just like took my glasses off, and I literally just collapsed on the bed, and I just passed out. And then I came around. This was in the same place where I was living on my own, by the way. So I was like, oh my Lord. And then I came back around and I was like, oh my God, what just happened? And I thought, okay, in addition to this potential appendicitis that I think I may or may not have, I've now just passed out. So there is something definitely super, super wrong with me. And I called like the nurse helpline, and just said, okay, I have these symptoms. This is what happened. And then I probably just like called my mother as well. And I was just kind of trying to be like, okay, what do I do with myself? You know, what's wrong with me? And then after a while, and you know, I think I even went to the doctors with it at some point. And I kept trying to tell them I passed out because I was reading these symptoms, and I think I might have just freaked myself out, and literally freaked myself out cold. But for some reason, they weren't paying attention to that. They just ignored that bit, which to me actually kind of explained what happened. And after a while, I realized that is what must have happened, because obviously I didn't have appendicitis and I passed out because I was reading those things, and I literally freaked myself out. And that's why I passed out. So basically I just made myself pass out because I was having that panicky moment, thinking that I had appendicitis. But when I was telling the doctors about this, I started emphasizing that and saying, you know, I had this stomach pain, but, you know, I don't know, by that point, maybe it went away, or I just said that because of this pain, I looked this up, but then I passed out because I'd read about this and I was feeling really panicky. And for some reason, they just fixated on the stomach pain, and they're like, you know, where was the pain? And I was like, actually, I'm not calling about the pain. Like, that's not really a thing. I'm calling about passing out. And I was expecting them to say, yeah, well, you just passed out because you freaked yourself out over this thing. But they didn't say that. So I was like, okay, forget it. I'm just not going to bother, I guess. But over time, I realized that's exactly what happened. And none of them even forwarded it as a possibility. Some people, you know, say that the doctors can do that sometimes, where you go to them with a serious thing and they just say, oh, it's not a big deal, or it's all in your head. But the thing is, in this situation, I forwarded that explanation myself. I said, you know, I feel as though actually I freaked myself out. And they should have said, you know what, yeah, probably you did. But it was the exact other way around, where they were insisting that it was like a real physical thing that they were going to look at in isolation to my story. When I was trying to give that context, and to, in my mind, that seemed to make more sense. All sorts of odd aches and pains can set it off, you know. Your leg is feeling a bit weird. Oh, is it a blood clot? You know, I remember at one point I had this, this weird sensation in my, like between my chest and my stomach, a very weird sensation. And I was having it for like a few days, and I thought, my God, what is this? And I was taking some pills at the time that were associated with, of course, as they all are, associated with the risk of heart attack and stroke and all these things. And even just reading that piece of paper is a task in itself mentally, to hold it together and not have a total freaking panic attack over it. And so I thought, oh my God, something's happening with me. And I was just freaking myself out over it. And then I went back to that piece of paper where he lists the symptoms, and it's got like 7 symptoms. And I realized that I had 1 out of the 7 symptoms. And I was like, my rational brain kicked in, and it was like, okay, 1 out of 7, like, seriously, stop taking the fucking piss. It's like, snap out of it. But the thing is, it's an emotional reaction. Even though when it's over, I think, oh, well, that was stupid. What the fuck was I thinking? And again, you know, I have a very rational scientific education and background. So it's nothing to do with the rational mind understanding the facts, or even the probabilities or anything like that. It's an emotional thing where those things just do not work anymore. And in hindsight, yes, it all seems so silly. But when you're in the midst of it and you really are, you believe that and you are convinced of it, it's a pretty shitty thing to go through. And sometimes I think, you know, if something is actually happening to you, you're not necessarily realizing it, or it doesn't really sink in fully straight away. So you just do what you need to do, and it's not as bad as something that you actually anticipate being bad. And you go through that anticipation as well as the thing itself. But when you've got hypochondria, it's like you go through all of these possible scenarios without them actually happening and being real. So on a mental level, you feel pretty tortured, and anxious. I think for me, as a way of coping with it over time, what I've done is just kind of make a mental note of how many things I've gone through that were just in my head and didn't turn out to be anything, which is pretty much all of them, or most of them at least. And I try to use that as something to cling on to in those moments when I feel it coming on, to just say, okay, I'm recognizing that it's happening, and I recognize what it is. And I am just guiding myself through that moment and waiting for it to pass. Another helpful thing is clinging on to the statistics that are in my favor, at least. And just, I suppose, thinking of the positive things. If I get like a full panel of bloods tested, and there's like 50 different things, you know, instead of looking for that one thing that's like slightly out of range and thinking that something must be wrong, I just look at, you know, all the other ones, the overwhelming majority of them, and just think, you know, that's perfect, that's perfect, that's perfect, you know. And I suppose at the end of the day, just a spiritual education of understanding where this anxiety is ultimately coming from, and feeling this this anxiety of not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and how my body is going to wither and die, and I will have missed out on whatever the hell I'm supposed to be doing with it, and just telling myself that the timing is right, and I will go as far as I need to go. And I am allowed to be comfortable and to enjoy myself without worrying about that. All right. Catch you next time. Oh, and by the way, leave a review, give a rating, write a review. That would be awesome.